Frugality is often thought of as scarcity or less, but in today's show, we flip the script entirely and call it abundance and opportunity. Hello and welcome to the Low Tox Life Podcast. I'm Alex Stewart, your host. Today is show 376 and I am so thrilled to invite Jen and Jill from Frugal Friends Podcast onto the show. I was on their show recently, which I highly recommend you look up. Quite similar to me, their show is approaching 400 episodes. They've had over 5 million downloads. So we are absolutely twinning on the podcast front. And on today's show, we just overlap so often with our values that they were instant best friends. It was a real kismet situation. And I know so many people in the low tox community have explored frugality, perhaps out of necessity initially, whether it might be the interest rate rises, the pandemic times, chronic illness and the financial hardships that come from that, and a number of different factors. Often we think about it as scrimping and saving and trying to do more with less. And that can carry a weight with it psychologically. And what I love about Jen and Jill is we have two people that have come together with a financial journalism background and with a clinical social work background to explore money behavior, mental health, and flipping the script on frugality and actually starting with what we love to spend our money on and what we love to do. And then reverse engineering to create a way of living that helps us amplify more of that. So I just know you're going to love today's show. I truly do. And obviously, before we hook into that, I would love to just remind you, we have our wonderful show supporters, Oz Climate, giving you 10% off with the code LOWTOXLIFE. On top of, by the way, as you see in my PSAs, often in Instagram stories, any sales that they might have going on, you get that 10% off, code LOWTOXLIFE on top. And if you don't have a dehumidifier or an air purifier yet, I would strongly suggest you look into either. I have a ton of content, blogs, so much helpful advice on when it is best to use them. One little question I've had a few times lately is, if I have an air purifier, why do I need a dehumidifier? Well, I always say start with a climate gauge. Assess your indoor humidity, and if you see it going above 60%, often know that microbial growth happens after just a couple of days of humidity being above 60%. And so you'll need dehumidifiers to support the prevention of microbial growth. An air purifier can't do that. And air purifiers are amazing at filtering mold spores, at filtering dust mite, other allergens, pollens, pollution, agricultural chemicals, but they can't alter humidity. That's the difference. And then, of course, if you're in the market for a water upgrade, we have 12% off with the code LOWTOXLIFE at Waters Co. Filters. Waters Co. are an incredible Australian brand shipping worldwide and having solutions to upgrade your water that come in lots of different forms. Whether it's the tiny mini waterman, the jug, the benchtop water filters, the under sink option, the shower filters, there is something to suit every situation, whether you rent, whether you own, whether you want that more permanent under sink solution, whether you want a fantastic little travel jug for camping, something for everyone. So enjoy those options for helping you make your low tox swaps. I've got all the details in the show notes. And of course, it's now time for the show. Enjoy. Jill and Jen, hello.
Hi, Alex.
Hi. Well,
How to spot the podcaster. Tell me you're a podcaster without saying you're a podcaster, right?
Welcome to your show,
Oh, thank
Alex.
you. I really, no one's ever welcomed me to my show.
They should do it more often.
I think so. You know, it's just that sense of appreciation for us all being here. And today we're talking about frugality. Let me hear from both of you. I'll start with you, Jill, on what got you on the frugal track. Was it a curiosity, or were you like born into a hippie family where it was the way of things and you saw everybody else being a bit of a disaster? What was this story for you?
Yeah, maybe a combination of all of the things. I would say frugality for me was instilled at a young age, although it looks different for me now than it did when I was younger. So I would have previously described my frugality as something that I participated in out of necessity, kind of bemoaning the fact that I don't have a lot, therefore I have to be as resourceful as possible and make everything stretch for as long as possible because the resources and the means just weren't there or felt like they weren't there. And I think as I've grown in this journey and frugality remains, because I do think that it is for everybody and can be lifelong, not just a means to an end, I've discovered that it's actually a life journey that I love and I'm embracing. So it began out of what I would call necessity, but then has grown into this. I see the benefits of what it means to be resourceful, to problem solve, to be able to be really mindful and intentional about my spending, and then therefore feel good about it. There's not shame attached to it for me. And it's not just about clipping coupons or getting the cheapest thing possible. It's about identifying where are my values and investing there and being really confident about how I use all of my resources to get at the things that I want out of life.
I love that. So good and so true. And I love that you use the word resourceful. I would add creative as well. And then these become really positive words, right? Jen, was it different for you or same, same?
I mean, similar, but in a different way. So I really thought that I was frugal growing up. I picked the medium latte at the coffee shop instead of the large, and I bought generic at the grocery store, but I wasn't really paying attention to all of my purchases. So a lot of my purchases were just going, like my money was going, and my budget said I should have had enough to save or pay off my student loans. But at the end of the month, I didn't. And I didn't understand why. Like I thought I was frugal. And so it took my husband and I paying off $78,000 of student loans in 2 years and like really just
Whoa.
right, like getting just focusing on one thing for 2 years for me to finally realize that I was spending mindlessly. I wasn't spending intentionally. And it took a while, but eventually I got to the point where it's more important to me to spend intentionally than to even be debt free. And so, like, I've got a car loan again. So I want to be able to, yes, save for the future and enjoy my spending now. I want to do both. And so we joined forces in Frugal Friends to kind of, at first help people, save as much money as possible on things in their lives. And it's kind of transformed into this. We want you to save where you can and spend where you want, while
Ooh, I love
also
that. Let's
saving for
not gloss over that. Save where
the
you can and
and spend where
spend
you
where you
want.
want. Beautiful.
Yeah, all while saving, because saving, we see it as this thing that's good for in the future, but not all of us have time to worry about the future, right? Some of us don't even have the financial means to worry about the future. But if you think about it as saving is alleviating stress in the here and now, stress for the future, because we all have money anxiety thinking about the future. So if you can fall in love with saving now for that simple fact, then it can totally change how you see saving. And so that's kind of what Frugal Friends is now.
So good. I love that. And then saving as well. It sounds responsible and good. But then it can also have this beautiful environmental connotation when we talk about food waste. You know, we keep seeing everybody demonizing beef, which of course factory farming is a shocker. Like, let's just straight up awful. And anyone in my community can eat however they feel is right for their body, all the things, you guys know me. But food waste, I mean, it would be the fifth, it would be the third largest country in the world behind China and America if it was a country worth of pollution and carbon emissions. And it just blows my mind that that is not a huge part of the conversation right now in terms of how beneficial frugal thinking is for food and just not wasting stuff, never, as well as the budget side, right?
This has become one of my growing number one aversions is food waste. I cannot stand it. Maybe to an alarming point,
Yeah, I know. My
just
son
eating
had
up
chili con carne
everything.
on toast for breakfast this morning because I was like, that's got to get used up. That's what breakfast is today.
Yeah, but I think when we can recognize the benefit both to ourselves and to our wallets and to our environment, there's just this whole combination of reasons pointing to why this is just a really great thing to pursue is low food waste. And for some, that could mean eating out more. If you just are not the person who's going to eat the groceries that you bought, you would be better off paying someone else to cook for you than constantly wasting food, wasting money on what's in your fridge.
Yeah, interesting point. And yeah, the carbon emissions as well. And so how does one start to think about living frugally? Like if someone feels like they're in a bit of a spiral, they're listening to our conversation, they're like, yeah, I'm pretty out of control in a number of fronts right now. But then you dip your toe in the water, and the first couple of accounts you might see on Instagram is that here's my plastic waste from 1 year. And then you think, oh, okay, obviously that's not me. So obviously I can't go down this frugal road. What do you feel like might be some of the more alluring baby steps that can really make someone feel like they've got some runs on the board?
Yeah, we advocate for small steps on everything, and especially if you're trying to live a more frugal life. And so the first thing is to take stock of what you really love spending money on. So, yes, frugality is seen as this scrimping, depriving, like all these negative connotations because people see frugality as that extreme, that giving up of anything, everything, that all your waste fits in a small glass jar sort of lifestyle. And so we really want people to have this mindset of I can love anything. I can love to buy anything, but I'm not going to love to buy everything, right? So what are those things that I truly value, that I truly love like getting and spending money on? And the first couple of them are going to be things money can't buy. So that we usually they're usually all or some of the four F's, family, friends, faith, and fulfilling work. And so these are usually the first things that people want. They want more time with their friends, more time with their family, more, flexibility in pursuing fulfilling work, all these things. More feeling like they're living in their purpose in their life. So these are usually the first things, but obviously you need money to, to get these things. So we don't advocate for living on a low income, very much the opposite. We think that you should optimize the time spent at work and make as much for your 40 hours a week as you can. Obviously, not advocating for hustle culture either. But so take stock of these things and then the things that actually do cost money that you just love to buy. They don't have to have like some deep, super deep, meaningful reason. Like, I love to buy coffee out. I just do. I just like it. So I do that pretty frequently. But there are other things I don't value as much that I've drawn a line in the sand and said, I don't do these regularly, if at all. So first we decide what we really love and what we're truly pursuing so that then we can draw that line and decide, okay, these are the things on the other side that I will only occasionally, rarely, if ever, spend on. and we draw another line and we say, these are things I will not spend on.
Love that. So good. And you know, I think that'd be a great exercise, a question for people to ask themselves, like, what are my top three favorite things to buy? Or to do, even, because as you mentioned, sometimes they don't actually have a monetary attachment in terms of value to you. And for me, I just thought straight away, buying a plane ticket to go see my family overseas, like, that is the number one most favorite thing I can and buy, and then just being somewhere different.
And I think that's what makes it approachable for so many, is when we're beginning from this place of what do you love and creating room and permission to be able to spend on that, rather than starting from a place of deprivation, which not just frugality has a negative connotation, but budgeting and a lot of other advice surrounding personal finance kind of can lead us to believe. But to fall in love with a journey of frugality and managing our resources well, it can start with what excites us most. We don't have to start with the most difficult thing and the deprivation. We can start with, what do you love?
What do you love? And then that is an invitation for this to be really positive, exciting. Well, let's make more room for that. And this is how we're going to do it.
Because when you decide what you love, especially if it's something like travel, then not only do you start making financial changes to accommodate that, but you start making schedule changes to accommodate that. And you start making relationship changes to accommodate the things you love. So if there's these toxic things in your life that are, you know, not, sorry, no pun intended, but if there's these toxic things in your life that maybe shouldn't be there, we start with one simple thing, the money, and it kind of permeates and creates health in other areas of your life as well.
Yeah, it, I agree. And in terms of in the kitchen then, because that is just such a huge space for saving money. I mean, like, we are leaving so much in our fridges to rot that then I think it's about a fifth. I looked up America as well. You guys seem to be around the same as
us. We're not
us.
Doing so great either.
No. Yeah, I mean, it's awful. And so you mentioned it was a real passion for you, Jill. Do you want to talk about some of the things that you do to save that cash and put it into something you love?
Absolutely. I think that there is no non-waste of food without a plan. So we are going to need to put in some work, but it can be around what makes sense for us. So we certainly advocate for meal planning and meal prepping, but in a way that is realistic for each individual, not this fantasized, I'd love to do 10,000 different veggies, but what do you know you actually eat, your family actually eats? And it can begin with, when we're doing the meal planning process, going through and taking inventory of our pantries and our fridges. What do we already have on hand, and what meals can I create around those things? So you can already start to kind of do a clean out of what you have on hand, and then maybe fill in the gaps of what you need to be purchasing. And then from there, keep a running list of what are the meals that my family enjoys eating, and those can be the things that are on rotation, and you can maximize and make your time the most efficient as possible when you are finally cooking, to make a little bit extra rice, make a few more roasted veggies, and be able to use those ingredients in different ways throughout the week. For me and my husband, we really don't care for leftovers, but that's been a fun way to gamify. I also don't like food waste, so I will take advantage of, you know, maybe 3 to 4 of the same ingredients, but repurposed in different ways. Like, some of my go-to is to do maybe a stir fry one day, or like a protein and rice, and then be able to reuse the rice to do a fried rice. Like, there's so many different things that we can do that reuses ingredients that we've already made, but it's not exactly the same meal. And also taking advantage of the freezer is such a huge one. I can have the best
thing. Oh, yeah. Plans. If I don't know what to do with it today, it goes in the freezer. And like, that buys me 3 months right there to figure it out.
I can have the best laid plans and then it just doesn't work out the way that I thought it was going to work out. But thankfully, nearly everything can go right into the freezer and be used again on a different day, potentially a month from now. For me personally, one of the things that has also helped a bunch is having a blender. It is my best way of using up leftover veggies, maybe even produce that's a little bit on its last leg that I don't really want to just sit here and chew on, but if it's thrown into a smoothie with some other goodies, then
A
I'll
smoothie is
totally
very
drink it.
forgiving.
I'm not talking about
Yeah.
mold. I'm not eating mold, but I think that as we're on this journey, we can make it work for us. We can implement and incorporate creativity, and we can make it fun and kind of gamify it along the way so that we again embrace the process and can really enjoy this journey of helping ourselves, helping the planet, helping our wallets.
So good. And there's something I often say and have written in my second book, which is more food oriented, is think about what you need to use up before you ask yourself, what do I fancy? But what you just said kind of made me want to take that a step further because you talked about how you don't really care for leftovers. It's true. It doesn't really jazz people much often. But if we think about what we need to use up first, and then we think about what we fancy, and we then try and find something where it's like, okay, I've got a ton of like, say, bolognese and veggie mince kind of sauce in the fridge. And it was like a bolognese last night. And I really don't feel like that again tonight. But if I added a packet of taco mix spice to that, we could turn that into tacos, and I definitely feel like Mexican, you know? So that could be extended to make the leftovers vibe a little more exciting. It doesn't have to be sit here and eat the same thing.
Yeah, I think giving ourselves room for that creativity is so important. I think, especially when it comes to cooking, there can be a lot of barrier to entry or a lot of people who feel as though they need to follow recipes to a T. And if I don't, it's going to be awful and no one's ever going to want to eat it. And I think as we go, we can build and grow our confidence and try new things and use substitutes, omit ingredients. And see what happens. And I think in that can help us with our creativity and how can I use up these ingredients in a way that isn't just the my typical go-to. And the internet is phenomenal for that kind of a thing. There are lots of people out there ready and willing to help you on how can I use fennel in a different way than how I've been using it? Fill in the blank. What can I do with leftover XYZ? Too many peppers. Oh my, what to happen next?
You could
The internet has
probably
the
search that,
answer.
yeah, that very
I did
phrase.
because I searched it
Too many
yesterday. Too many
So
peppers.
you
Too many
searched too many peppers, capsicum
peppers.
for us here in Australia. What came up? What did you do with them?
There were all sorts of options from making salsa verde to stuffed poblanos. Honestly, I was running out of time before they were just not going to be good anymore. So I just sliced them up and threw them in the freezer. But now they're ready. As I was doing that and seeing it come into this final shape of being diced, I was realizing this would go really nice in a quiche. So now I've got my idea. It's in the
Nice.
freezer, it's ready for me. If I ever want to make a stir fry or a quiche, it's there and prepped.
Yeah, brilliant. We had ham from mum and dad at Christmas. I don't know if you do you guys do like a big ham at Christmas? I don't think is it an Australian thing? I'm not
Yeah, a
sure.
lot of
Yeah,
people
ham is
do.
Christmas. Yeah. And so, but then one of my husband's friends decided he wanted to give all of his best mates a ham for Christmas. So we ended up with, and it wasn't just one of the half leg, it was this enormous thing that got delivered. And I was like, okay.
We do ham, but not that
How
much
much ham can you do?
ham.
Well, if you ask anyone on like January 2nd, they say, I'm never eating ham again. Yeah, so we ended up dicing it and putting it into, you mentioned quiche. So we put it into like little parcels of kitchen paper and then like sectioned it off. And we've still got a couple in our freezer. And it was just sort of that enough to chuck into three omelets over 3 mornings, and we can use that batch. And then there's the quiche, and then there's all the different things that you can do with it. Chuck it into a stir fry, not stir fry, what do you call it? Fried rice. So it's been fantastic because we literally always just have that easy protein on hand to just slip into everything. And I think we often think, oh, I've just got to get it through as much of it as possible before it goes bad, and then it goes bad.
Yeah,
But
people are
we
scared
don't
to
want to get to
freeze
that
a
point.
lot of things, and they do so
There
many
is
things
freezer
freeze
fear,
so
isn't
well.
there? Yes.
Yeah,
It's
but
like,
Jill will
oh,
tell you everything can go in the freezer,
everything goes in the freezer.
99.9% of
Everything.
things.
And do we have to
Cheese,
worry about things
bread.
like cheese, really?
Oh, yeah, I love throwing my cheese in there.
Because sometimes, like if you've had friends over and then like it's one of those runny brie, could you even just put that in the freezer and then just melt it into a quiche later? I guess you
Oh,
could.
I would. I'm not saying like the internet's gonna tell you to, but I'll tell you to. I particularly like it for my shredded cheeses. I'm a big fan of like quesadillas, or I use feta a lot, or Parmesan when I make my homemade Caesar salad dressing. So those particularly shredded cheeses just do really well. And I don't even have to defrost it. I can just pull out the amount that I need for whatever I'm making, and it just lasts and lasts.
Awesome. And can we talk about freezing things like different types of veggies and legumes?
Yes. Yes. I mean, you seem excited about that. I exclusively eat veggies from the freezer. So I will usually cook my veggies when I eat them, even in a salad. So instead of just buying fresh, I buy frozen, and it's picked at peak freshness and immediately frozen, so it retains more of its nutrients. And then I get these like beautiful vegetables that I can roast and I put on anything, and I never have to worry about when I'm using them, or worry about them going bad because they just live in the freezer. So and honestly, I will put frozen broccoli right onto a sheet pan, throw it in the oven, and it's like it never saw the freezer. It's just as good as fresh. And I love it. And I don't have to chop it either. I don't have to prep it because it's already pre-chopped. I'm a huge advocate for buying things like pre-prepared because I have two young children. We're going through a home renovation. I am so busy. So if the barrier to entry for cooking at home is having to make extra dishes by chopping things, then I'm going to buy takeout. And so I buy the pre-prepared, especially frozen stuff that's already chopped that I can just pour out and ready to go. And I save money, even though I spend a smidge more at the grocery store, by buying it pre-chopped. I'm saving overall because I'm more likely to choose eating at home, and I will waste less food because sometimes the person who meal plans on Sunday is not the same person who is cooking on Thursday. Even though they are both me, they are not the same person. So I prepare for Thursday Jen, by Sunday Jen, who is full of hopes and dreams, knowing that Thursday Jen will not be the same
Thursday Jen's
person.
tired.
Thursday Jen is tired. Monday Jen is tired. So yeah, I just prepare for that in advance.
How old are your kids?
One and five,
Yeah, that is
almost
busy.
five. Yeah.
Wow. And I love what you said there about the barrier to entry because I think, I don't know why it comes with the job of being a woman or a mum as well. I feel like it's compounded this idea that it all has to be done a certain way, and different people on the internet have taught us. And often it's people whose jobs it is to cook that are doing the teaching, and that is not lost on me as an irony of why we all feel like failures as a result. And so I think it is so important. It, like, as much fresh, natural, and by fresh, I include frozen, natural, like single ingredient food as possible in our overall food mix. And then how are you going to get that across the line? don't feel guilty about the rest. So good. And Jill, are you a fan of doing anything fancy with veggies, legumes in the freezer? Can we freeze things like, I always find if I freeze zucchini or broccoli before I've blanched it, it gets watery on the defrost, and then I think, but I don't want to blanch it. So I usually end up then just making a soup, which is just like cook, 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 and blend, and then that gets put in the freezer.
Yeah. That's the thing. I think if you plan to use the vegetables, if you want to put the vegetables in the freezer raw, and you know that you will most likely use them in some sort of stew, soup, casserole, bake, you'll probably be fine. You might want to plan for more water than, like you're saying, even in the baking process. So that might mean adjusting your starches to allow for the fact that there might be a little bit more water in the veggie. But you can more easily get away with putting the veggies in raw when they don't already have a lot of moisture in them. So it works well with broccolis and cauliflowers, and the peppers will be fine again because I'm going to throw them into a quiche. But it's not something you're going to want to do with spinach or other leafy greens, that they're just going to wilt. It would be better to blanch them or saute them or throw it on, not the leafy greens, but other root vegetables, that kind of a thing, on a roasting pan and roast it and then put it in the freezer. So sometimes it's going to take a little bit of that extra step, but usually less time than to cook a full meal. So if you see that your things are starting to wilt and go and you're not going to have time to cook a full meal, can you at least carve out a few minutes to prep the veggie to go into the freezer?
Cool.
Or try
So
it, or just throw it in the freezer and then have an
give it a
experiment.
go.
Yeah, experiment with it.
I feel like we could tie that into, like, if they are better cooked before they go into the freezer, and again, I'm leaving out the leafy greens, poor leafy greens, they're just getting tossed to the side here. But like the root veggies, zucchini, capsicum, peppers, carrots, all that kind of stuff, broccoli. If we were roasting a tray of mixed veggies to have with some chicken that night, like, could we roast all the veggies we have if the next couple of days are going to be busy, and then just freeze anything we're not going to use? So then it
Absolutely.
doesn't really take much extra time at all.
Well, that's what I was going to say. If I'm cooking a meal and I see something that it needs to be frozen or needs to be cooked, then I'll just put it on a small little tray and throw it in with the dinner. And I have, I always try to do something if there's any room left while I'm already making dishes. Is there something else I can do that my later self, my future self will thank me for? So like, what's one thing I can do for dinner to make the next dinner or a dinner in the future a little easier? And that's always helped me. So even maybe a 30-minute dinner, I cut it down to 10 or 15 prep time. So it's always stuff like that. Like, just there's while I'm waiting for this thing to cook, what's one thing I can be doing since I'm already standing here? I already have the knife out. I already have the cutting board out. What's like one thing I can do to prep something so that I can use it in the future, so I'm more likely to eat the food I have at home and I'm less likely to create waste?
And that's tied to having a meal plan. So having thought ahead about what can you eat for that entire week, because I hear what Jen's saying and sometimes my mind can go to, yeah, but I just got over the hurdle of what am I going to eat tonight? And now I got to think about what am I going to eat tomorrow and what should I do now to eat that tomorrow? But if we have a plan in place that's realistic, then we can absolutely know what's one thing I could do now that plays into something later on in the week. And a note on that, something we've loved to do is create a template for a meal plan, because that also can feel really daunting. So we'll change it up, but for instance, we might do a meal plan for an entire month where every Monday is Meatless Mondays, Tuesday is Taco Tuesday, Wednesday is no cook because we're tired, Thursday is a handheld, Friday is something that you pull from the freezer because a previous self had put something in the freezer for you.
Yay.
Saturday, you might plan to get together and have a potluck with friends, and so on and so forth. I will then sometimes add an additional layer to that template to define themes for the week. So maybe one week is Mexican inspired, another week is Asian inspired, another week is American inspired. So I'm still doing different types of meatless Mondays, taco Tuesdays, no cook Wednesdays, but it's within a similar family of ingredients across the week so that I know that I'm going to use up the things that I purchase and things are not going to go to waste. Weird spices or condiments will get used up because it's still in the same theme, even though we're eating different things every day. So when we can find ourselves a template, just do a little bit of Googling and fill that in, it can really help us to then know, what more can I do in the kitchen? What is just 5 minutes extra that's going to help me for the rest of the week?
Yeah. And I think key there is that 5 minutes extra is a big save somewhere else. Like I always say, if you can cook double, do, because then the double goes in the freezer and you've got it for that crazy day. And then you're not washing two chopping boards or two knives or two saucepans. I mean,
the
benefits are endless. It's just a mindset shift.
Yes. And I love the template also for our creatives who hate plans, feel
That's
kind of
me.
Maybe more restricted by plans, right? So if you have a template, it feels less restrictive than like a set meal plan. And if you can just like look, anytime you get the opportunity to look in your fridge and say, like, what can I do right now that will prevent food waste later? Then you already have an easy decision for the next day because when you kind of batch the tasks, right? Like, if I'm thinking about what I'm making tonight, let me also think about what I'm going to make tomorrow based on what I have here. So it makes tomorrow's decision is already made because you made it today. And so that's kind of, we do want you to work up to a meal plan because the meal plan doesn't have to be restrictive, but we can start with kind of this mindset of, you know, let me make today's, tomorrow's decision at the same time I'm making today's, and then work up to that template and move forward. You don't have to work against your natural tendencies to save money and reduce waste.
100%. And I found like my happy medium because I was like, why am I failing at meal plans for years? I was like, I write them for other people. Why can't I stick to one myself? But now what I do is things like I just write ingredients. So chicken, sweet potato, zucchini, beef mince. That will be my meal plan, right? And so that I still have a ton of creativity on the day based on what I feel like doing in terms of which direction I take that. Now, the caveat there is you need the skills. You need a cooking vocab to actually be able to plan that way. But if you are a good cook, it will be probably the flexibility you're looking for when you sometimes think, well, you know, I'm not going to eat that. Like, why did I even predict that I was going to feel like that exact dish 4 days ago? Because I don't.
Yeah. And if you're creative, that's in your power too. Like work with the natural skills you have of creativity and do stuff like that. Like for me, I'm a planner. I follow recipes to a T and I don't have an imagination in the kitchen. So that would be scary. And
that'd be scary and overwhelmed for you. So I think we need to recognize who we are. I love that you said, just think about your natural skills because one man's overwhelm is another man's excitement and that's okay. And that's why one protocol never works for everybody. Love it. Now, frugality around kids. I want to ask you about this because a lot of parents struggle with those, but everybody at school has it. And, you know, and like, where do we draw those lines between social inclusion and mindfulness around spending? Because most people, if you did just get them everything, A, you end up with a little shithole, but who thinks that they're entitled?
Sad.
They deserve everything. So that's not great. Pardon the language there. But B, you end up with not much money to do those things you love that you talked about. So how do we deal with that? Creating a positive frugality in our kids.
That is something I think about all the time because my 5-year-old is just getting to that point where he's starting to think about social acceptance. Isn't that's crazy at 5 years old? And so wanting to like make sure that I set him up for that, like I'm not ruining his chances for social acceptance, but also I think it's instilling in our kids the why behind what we're doing and really playing into their skills and desires and passions to reiterate why we're doing it. You know, we're not just doing it to save money. We're not just doing it so we can afford a family vacation over the summer. Like that stuff doesn't really speak to them. But it's finding out like what they truly love and saying like we are not going to get this because we want to be able to afford this summer camp for you. And then also having them make a lot of their own financial decisions younger than you think that they may be able to make them, and letting them make wrong decisions too, right? And letting them be wrong, regret decisions, so that they make small regrets and small mistakes now, so they're not making big ones later. So the earlier we let kids, you know, make mistakes and sit in those consequences, the smaller and safer they will be. And then also sometimes it's choosing your battles. Like sometimes I can't afford to have a meltdown like in the grocery store, and I just have to give in for my own sanity. But I make sure I am, you know, being wise enough like enough times that I can be a little selfish in other times. So it's not being perfect. It's not being, you know, doing the right thing all the time. But I think it's really getting to the heart, like making them want to save money. And just for the sake of saving isn't going to work for them. There has to be other reasons outside of things that they'll want to value it.
Nice. Do you have anything to add, Jill, on that front?
I am not a parent, so I'm not going to
That's
sit
totally
here and
fine, but
try
I'm
and tell
sure there's
people
a
what
lot
to
of
do.
people in your community as well. And thinking back to being a kid yourself, like you grew up thinking, oh my gosh, I don't get to have all the things. And this comes up for a lot of people. How do you feel that that actually benefited you, maybe? Were there
Yeah,
positives to
sure.
that?
Well, yeah, and I can speak too. So I don't have children, but I can lean into my mental health background and understanding of child development and just that we're all humans. We're our own people. I think sometimes we can look at kids like they are the property of the parents. And certainly the parents are responsible for them, but they are budding individuals. And I think this whole conversation intersects with any relationship that we might have. It has its nuances. It's certainly different. You are training up a child and teaching them things that they don't already know. But I do think it can come back to, like what Jen is saying, learning what they value, because we are also on that journey ourselves. What do I love? What do I want to spend money on? It can't be all of the things. But it's not as if it's none of the things either. And so when we hit these places of identifying where should we put our resources and how should we spend as a family, with a spouse or partner, with kids, I think there can be room for conversation for everybody at the table to be able to say, I value this, and it might not be the same as mine. What your kids value may not be the same as what you value, but can there still be room to honor one another in that, even if you don't understand it, even if it's not the same as yours? So that doesn't mean giving kids all of the things, but really helping them be able to identify and understand themselves of what are the top few things that you really do value, even if they're not the same as me, even if I don't really understand it and I don't think that that's the greatest thing for you to spend your money on.
And most of the time I do not understand it.
If there is room for it, if there can be an allocation of some of these resources to honor the values of the other people in your family, then there's going to be buy-in from everyone on this journey of values-based spending, of frugality.
Such good advice and such nice reflection to do there as well about, you know, really listening to your kid. Like, are they totally lighting up and excited? You don't want to just bottle that excitement for that thing. You want to say, tell me more. Like, and then what does it do? Like, let them go absolutely wild with their enthusiasm. And then tell them maybe no. No, just kidding. Just kidding.
And there's definitely, like, yeah, sometimes they get excited about things we truly can't afford. Like, my son loves new cars, yes. Specifically new cars. And he's like, we should get a new car. And I was like, no. Like,
well, yeah, okay. My son wanted a PS5 for Christmas and a PlayStation. And that is probably a normal thing for a 14-year-old to ask for Christmas, but that wasn't something that we could do at the end. And I said, sweetheart, I've actually already got you your Christmas present. I think you're going to really love it. And it was the volleyball shoes he was desperate for. So that he was very excited and a new tennis outfit. But I couldn't then go and spend, like, certainly not on a full price one. But then we talked about the benefits of refurbished options, the ones where they're still buying from retailers, super, super well-checked, well-refurbished. They would take it back if it doesn't work, kind of secondhand. And why don't we put a savings plan up together and see what kind of jobs you're doing at the moment and the job you're doing at the tennis camp for the weekends and how quickly could you get there? And it actually turned into like a really exciting delayed gratification exercise, which I think is like a missing piece in this conversation. There's the yes, you can, no, you can't, but then there's the how can I help you get there? Because it's not going to come from me. And that's really an amazing part of growing up where you start to learn. No, go for it.
And are there alternatives to what it is that you love? I think we all do well with parameters. Mm-hmm. Unlimited and limitless, we kind of flounder. But if given not super restrictive, but degrees of parameters, kind of these boundary lines that we can operate within, our creativity soars. And so same thing with kids. They operate well within a certain set of boundaries and parameters. And especially when it comes to spending, this, okay, here's what you're interested in, this one toy, but what is it about that toy? And some of this, they may not even be able to communicate, but you can observe them engaging in it. And are there ways that we can meet this need, satisfy this value in a way that doesn't aid to overconsumption? We're not just filling our homes with useless plastic that is going to devalue immediately and is just going to get thrown away in the next year. But mm-hmm. are there things that we can do that kind of recreate this experience using what we already have or something that's used or taking advantage of resources like the library for even the video games that they may want to play at, you know, in a really kind of boundaried way? It's not limitless availability, but limited. And again, I think we can take comfort in the fact that we do best with that. It's not as if you gave your child the entire world that they would do better. Actually, no.
Yeah,
we do well with parameters and definition.
Right. Yeah. Mm. And letting them in behind the scenes more than you think they're ready for. Obviously not your entire financial picture, but I think we it's been told to us somewhere along the lines is you can protect your children by not telling them anything about your money, and we've seen that backfires. So letting them know, like, this is the percent we spend on this, this is the percent we spend on this, this is, you know, the percent that's left over for, you know, whatever we want. Like, how do you think we should spend it? What should we save for a vacation? What should we save for Christmas gifts? And then say, what should we spend? What percentage do you think, you know, you should have as an allowance or something. And so then they can see what that amount is. It's typically going to be smaller than they thought it would be as a percentage, but then they understand where it is on a percentage of the whole. And then saying like, okay, so this is kind of our limit for, you know, what we can get. Anything above this, you're going to have to, you know, spend your own money on. So let's, you know, let's look at prices for PS5s and let's compare them to prices for, you know, used consoles and refurbished consoles. And let's think about the extra expenses. And so just letting them in on the whole process, we really deprive our kids when we just, you know, even if we do want to gift them something, if we don't also let them behind the scenes of the process, like you can give your kids good gifts and also, you know, let them in behind, you know, behind the scenes without being like, look at how hard I worked for you. And I had to spend all this money. And
yeah,
that's kind of the end result. That's not the process, right?
Yeah.
But we're looking at the, you know, budget as a whole. So kids can get an idea of like, okay, this is what I can expect when I'm mm-hmm. older. And but yeah, they'll say, and but I'm gonna make $100,000 more than you. So that's what they're going to think.
But yeah, we'll see. And but also to think like that, then they then know that they can't just keep asking for things. I think that's actually a really important thing for them to learn. A couple of months ago, Seb said to me, you know, Mom, I really need a monitor to go with my school laptop because I just want to be able to see everything bigger on the screen. Now, that's actually a really valid reason to want a monitor. And then I saw him online, like looking at monitors. I'm like, so we haven't budgeted for this. And the things that you're looking at are like $400, $500, $600. Where's that going to come from? Like, are you thinking of saving up for a monitor? He's like, no, I thought you'd buy it. I'm like, well, maybe in 7 months when I can put it in the budget, but not now. And so I said, you know, people are always getting rid of things. Let's just keep an eye out. And then sure enough, guy down the road, moving overseas, selling his perfectly excellent monitor for $20. Popped down, gave him $20 cash. I was very happy to spend that, and boom. And I think kids, like, by having that conversation, no, it's not going to happen now. It can happen if we plan for it a few months down the track. But let's now keep an eye on what it could look like to find a good deal on one. Because our kids see Instagram, and like now they're even terrified of having a crease in their freaking sneakers. Like, we are getting to this bizarre overconsumption, perfect, like such, like the rapid fashion micro trends, I think, is doing it, where there's a new sneaker every 2 months. And so then all the influencers are wearing them. Now, thankfully, he's not into all of that, but I am definitely seeing there's very few kids around wearing the Reeboks that were kind of falling apart that I grew up with in the 80s, where you were like, please, dear God, get me a new pair of kicks. Like, it was just so desperate by the time you got a new pair, and it's not like that anymore. So it's like we're trying to slow a freight train down as older generations for these younger, more influenced consumer generations.
Oh, that's such a good way to put it. And you're not going to stop a freight train all at once. You have to conserve your energy and, you know, push back when you can, and conserve your strength where you can't.
Love it. And then my last question around frugality is appliances, like big things. Because sometimes it's just so hard to find repair resources. And I know some countries are doing pretty well in this. Northern Europe seems to be bringing in a lot more repair rights and even incentivizing, I think Sweden was incentivizing clothing repair recently. And they brought in, like, you know, everyone can claim a voucher from the government to get their things. I mean, like,
oh, Sweden. Sweet, sweet Sweden. Good for them.
Good for them. But like when it comes to a dryer breaking, like it seems like there's this one, and he is very advanced in age now, guy, four suburbs away, who has his little repair shop. Like, it looks like such an antiquated style of business. And yet We should have one in every suburb. These things are huge and they end up in landfill and they cost a lot to replace. It feels very unfrugal to not repair such big things. Have you got any tips for people?
Unfortunately, when the costs of labor and repair and parts are nearly as expensive as getting the thing itself, it really is kind of working backwards and not for us. But I am with you. We love to first see if we maintain,
Yeah,
fix and
maintain.
repair, buy used or pre-owned, buy discount, and the very last resort would be buying new. And so, first of all, with the things that we have, we can increase the longevity of our things so much if we maintain them. And again, speaking of the resource that the internet is, there is so much on how to maintain a refrigerator, a dishwasher, a washing machine, a dryer, whatever it is that you have in your home, your own heating and cooling system, how-tos on the specific models that you have. So we recommend creating a system where you are maintaining your appliances at the rate to which it's recommended. So if it's every 3 months you need to do a big clean out of your dryer vent, then making sure that there's alarms in your phone to be able to do those things, because it's a little bit of a nuisance in the moment, but over the long term, it's going to save us thousands of dollars. So doing those simple maintenance things that do not require you to be a construction contract worker at all. These are things that we can all do as people who utilize these appliances. And then from there, yeah, looking into whatever warranties might have come with the product or that you may have purchased at the time and utilizing repair services, getting estimates and quotes on what is it going to cost you if it is a larger repair. And if the item does need to be replaced, I know every place is different, but any place I have ever lived, we have had within a 30-minute radius some sort of scratch and dent offering, a place where you can go and find these appliances that you're looking for that might be a little bit beat up but still functional at a fraction of the cost, alongside just using places like Facebook Marketplace and other platforms where people can sell their used items that we can then purchase again at a fraction of the cost. These are all the things that we would recommend with because the appliances are a heavy hitter when they come to the cost of running them, the cost of replacing them. So however much life we can get out of our appliances, the better.
Yeah, and I'll add to that YouTube. We've had a lot of listeners tell us that they've gotten a quote from somebody on a repair and it's been expensive, and they've just searched the repair on YouTube and it has been easy enough for them to just go out and buy the part and do it themselves. And so obviously that's not going to be for every repair, but if you know the thing that does need to be repaired, you don't have to troubleshoot it, and it's something, you know, that the YouTuber is saying is pretty easy. Then we've had a lot of listeners tell us that they saved so much money by just watching the YouTube video and switching out the part themselves. And I recently found this guy on Instagram. It's got like weekly home maintenance or something, where he sends an email out once a week with one home maintenance thing to do every week. This week, I think, was like clean out your fridge and like including the coils behind the fridge, because hair and dust get stuck in there and it like impedes the function, costs more on energy and all of that stuff. So yeah, having something like that, it not just saves you money on having your appliances longer, but it can even save on energy costs.
That is such a great tip. And I totally agree with the YouTube thing. There is always a friendly person on YouTube taking you through it. Just for everything. I remember the last time I had a printer, which I haven't had one for years, but when I did, the printer cartridge just honestly felt like you needed an engineering degree to replace. Like, I could not believe how complicated they made something that
Why
should be
do
quite
they make it
simple.
that? Yes,
I
why do
don't
they make it
know.
that
And I
complicated?
thought, oh my gosh, this is literally driving me insane. I wonder. And I Googled, the model and replacing printer cartridge. There was a sweet lady who was saying, now these can be a bit tricky to replace. So let me take you through it. And she was so kind and was like, thank
I
you,
love it.
Betty.
YouTube is a
I was
treasure.
thank you, Betty.
Yes, it's a
YouTube
treasure.
Betty. I love Betty. So, oh my gosh, we could talk frugality for ages, and there are so many different aspects of life, but I'm going to encourage everybody to connect with your wonderful and generous account on Insta and the links in the show notes that we have for you to find Jen and Jill and their brilliant work at Frugal Friends. Thank you both of you so much. Can I ask each of you to share a here's one thing I would love you to consider this week moving forward, something both of you are passionate about individually. Jen, you kick us off.
I would encourage people to maybe pull up your last 90 days of transactions. You could do that just in your bank statement and go through and maybe digitally or on paper highlight the ones that you really loved, the ones that you remember you spent on them and they really did get you the thing that you wanted. And then compare that to all the things that didn't. And start thinking about the difference between what you love and what you don't love. Just start thinking about it.
Love that. Jill, yours?
And I will stick on the theme of pondering because I do think that this journey begins with our thoughts and our mindset. So to be considering your own money story. What is your understanding starting from childhood to now? What have been your experiences with money? How do you feel about money? How do you feel about your spending? Can be some helpful questions to coincide with the activity that Jen just described to really help us understand ourselves because that is the foundation from which we can build a life that we feel really good about.
Oof, love it. Thank you both so much for joining me.
Thanks for having us,
Thanks for
Alex.
having us.
I hope you loved today's show as much as I loved bringing it to you. I want to remind you that if you are someone who craves a low-tox community that is judgment-free, full of empowerment, has health professionals and building health professionals that can support you, as well as me in there answering questions multiple times a week, I want to invite you to join the Low-Tox Club. For the price of less than a cup of coffee a month, you have an annual membership for $49 Australian, so it's about $30 US or Euro, that allows you to have a member masterclass every single month with a health professional or global expert from the podcast, where we have them to ourselves for an hour to ask questions and deep dive further. You have the beautiful supportive chat group. You have Q&As with me answering questions. We read books and talk about them and a whole bunch more. You can head to lowtoxlife.com, hit the explore tab, and join the club is the very first option on that list. Of course, we have over 10 evergreen courses that you can jump into anytime, whether it's navigating everyday low tox swaps with our Go Low Tox signature course, whether you have kids and you're wanting to know how to best support them with our Low Tox Kids course, whether you're planning a family and looking at a healthy low tox preconception journey, reducing inflammation, especially the chronic kind, with our Inflammation Ninja course, many, many other courses. You can again head to lowtoxlife.com, hit the courses tab, and you'll see all of the options, which includes a business course, my Low Tox Method program. A lot of people don't know, but I was doing a lot before starting Low Tox Life in 2009, and I was a business consultant across hospitality, health, retail, and cosmetics. I have been in business consulting for a very long time, so I absolutely adore helping people move into the low tox space or develop their low tox businesses. So that's a way I can support you. And then, of course, there's our wonderful social media communities at Low Tox Life on Instagram and, of course, the website with over 250 gluten-free recipes, blogs, downloadable PDFs to help you navigate wanting to get rid of synthetic fragrances in your school or office. I could go on. So head to LotoxLife.com, see what takes your interest or fancy, and thank you so much for being a part of our podcast community. I love, love, love reading your reviews. I appreciate every follow and subscribe. And I want to just remind you to finish off that if there's anything you heard that you found interesting from a medical or scientific perspective, it is intended as education only. Please always chat to a health professional who knows you and your situation best. I'll see you next week. Bye.